It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 40 degrees, under partly cloudy skies, calm winds at the airport, 53% humidity, and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for mostly sunny skies for today and tomorrow and Wednesday, with partly sunny skies on Thursday. Coming up on the Midday Report, Vic Fisher, the last living signer of Alaska's Constitution, died on Sunday. Wrangell's government has committed millions of dollars to developing new housing. People are questioning whether the housing will get into the hands of locals it's meant for. And the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention turns to subsistence. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. Two more hostages have been freed from Hamas, according to the International Committee of the Red Cross, which says it facilitated their release. NPR's Daniel Estrin reports from Tel Aviv on the second hostage release since militants invaded southern Israel and abducted them 2.5 weeks ago.
The Red Cross said the release took place this evening. Israeli Public Broadcasting named the released Israelis as Nurit Yitzchak Cooper and Yocheved Lifshitz, around 80 and 85 years old, respectively. Their husbands are reportedly still being held in Gaza. Israel says 220 hostages are still in Gaza. Last Friday, an American mother and daughter were released. Other U.S. citizens remain missing or held hostage. Israel continues to bombard Gaza and is preparing for a possible ground invasion. Daniel Estrin, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
President Biden said hostages should be released before the U.S. would support a ceasefire. The House is in a new go-round to try to elect a speaker. 9 Republicans are running, but the math is the same as when Republicans kicked out Speaker Kevin McCarthy nearly 3 weeks ago, and they have so far been unable to unify behind a candidate. The Republican candidates are set to make their pitches to colleagues tonight. NPR's Deirdre Walsh has the latest.
The House of Representatives continues to be frozen without a speaker. Of the 9 candidates in the race, House Majority Whip Tom Emmer from Minnesota may have an edge. He's currently number 3 in the House and ran the GOP campaign committee. Mike Johnson from Louisiana and Gary Palmer of Alabama also serve in Republican leadership. After listening to all the candidates speak in a closed-door forum, members vote via secret ballot on Tuesday. With so many in the running, that process could take multiple rounds. A full House vote could come as soon as Tuesday, but it's unclear if a new nominee can get the votes needed to win the gavel, 217, if all members are present and voting. Deirdre Walsh, NPR News, The Capitol.
Chevron has agreed to buy rival energy company Hess for $53 billion. NPR's Scott Horsley has this report.
Chevron's tie-up with Hess is the second big oil company deal in as many weeks. It follows ExxonMobil's acquisition of Pioneer Natural Resources earlier this month. The purchase gives Chevron access to shale oil fields in North Dakota, as well as a major field in South America. Oil price has been hovering around $90 a barrel, although retail gasoline prices in the U.S. continue to slide. AAA reports the average price of regular gas is about $3.55 a gallon. It's fallen by a nickel in the last week and is down 30 cents from a month ago. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey pleaded not guilty today in federal court in New York City to a charge alleging he conspired to act as an agent of the Egyptian government. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Vic Fisher, the last living signer of Alaska's Constitution, died on Sunday at his Anchorage home. He was 99. Fisher grew up in Berlin and Moscow. His mother was Russian and his father an American foreign correspondent. His father appealed to Eleanor Roosevelt to get the family out of the Soviet Union, and so, as Fisher later told it, his introduction to democracy began with dinner at the White House with the President and the First Lady. He was barely 15. Fisher interrupted his university studies to serve in World War II. By the end of it, he was committed to the values that would guide his life, which he described as liberal and humanistic, including support for the vulnerable and combating racism. He came to Alaska in 1950 and advocated for statehood. 5 years later, he was elected to help draft Alaska's Constitution. Fisher spoke of it at a 2015 storytelling event.
Participating in the Constitutional Convention was a fabulous way of being part of democracy and state building.
He was later elected to the last territorial legislature. He said his most important work was co-authoring the repeal of Alaska's death penalty,
which was very important to me based on my abhorrence of the power of the state to kill its citizens, as I had seen in Germany and in Russia.
Fisher served 2 terms in the state Senate as a Democrat. He remained active in politics until his final months. His efforts included the unsuccessful recall of Governor Mike Dunleavy, whose government-slashing agenda Fisher felt ran counter to the intent of the state constitution and the achievements of statehood. Wrangell's government has committed millions of dollars to developing new housing lots at the site of a former Bureau of Indian Education boarding school. As KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, the borough faces serious questions about how to ensure their mission is met, getting the new housing lots into the hands of locals who see Wrangell as a year-round home.
Earlier this summer, the former Wrangell Institute site was covered in thick alders. Now, trucks drive back and forth from the site carrying loads of brush. Large swaths of the sloping area have been cleared and are dotted with heavy machinery. The ground is covered in rock pads, getting ready for construction. The western half of the 134-acre property closest to Zamovia Highway is being developed into 22 new housing lots. The development is called Aldertop Village after the historic Tlingit name for the site, Keishan Gitaan. Borough Manager Jeff Good says Wrangell officials want Aldertop Village to help families grow roots in town.
And the whole goal, I think, of the property and what the assembly wanted to do was to help lower to middle income families and the younger families to be able to afford a property, to build a house or have a house, and to move here for jobs, because that's an issue for us as we move forward, and that really impacts our economic development.
But how does a municipal government ensure newly built lots in Wrangell's tiny, tight housing market actually get into the hands of the intended buyers, those lower-income young families that will build a home and a life on the island? Wrangell Economic Development Director Kate Thomas says her office is deep in discussions about how to best sell the lots, whether through public surplus auctions, sealed bids, a lottery-style draw, or over-the-counter sales. She says they're looking at case studies of other municipalities' lot sales.
We're also looking at criteria of the sale or stipulations, whether that be a requirement to have Alaska residency, a certain number of years or terms for development, like you have to develop within 5 years of purchasing the land, minimum down payments. Another stipulation that we saw that was interesting was in order to qualify for lottery sale, you couldn't already own land. So it gets the land into the hands of first-time landowners or home builders, which would be a positive thing, although there are some challenges or downfalls to that. And then limiting the number of parcels that people can purchase so that you don't have a monopoly on the land or something like that.
The borough does have some time to make decisions.
So while construction is underway for roads and clearing, we still need to do the contract bids for utilities. And so there's a lot more planning and construction that needs to take place before they're ready for sale.
But Thomas says local interest is already high.
Since ground has been broken, we've probably received 10 different inquiries, and the folks on the ground out there said they probably could have sold 6 parcels already just with people walking up on site.
The history of Kayshan Gitaan plays a role in how it's being developed as well. In 2021, development plans for the site ground to a halt after a First Nations group found the remains of hundreds of Indigenous children on the grounds of a former boarding school in British Columbia. In the following weeks, thousands more children were found at former school sites around Canada. The horrific discoveries prompted the U.S. federal government and Alaska State Historic Preservation Office to look into residential boarding schools in the state. A federal records survey and ground survey of the site did not find any cultural artifacts or human remains at the former Wrangell Institute, and development plans resumed in 2022. But because of Aldertop Village's historical significance, Wrangell is still required to have an archaeologist on site any time contractors might be disturbing the ground. Wrangell's assembly recently approved a contract extension for the archaeologist as development work has gone longer than expected. The monitor costs about $1,600 per day. That's caused some frustration for local assembly members like Bob Dalrymple.
I don't begrudge the work and the necessary work to do this. I do begrudge the amount per day. It just blows me away. So how many people is it that we're paying for $1,600 a day? Is it one person? One?
Yeah, I think it's one.
How do I get a job like that? I better say.
If the ongoing first phase development of Aldertop Village extends past November, it could cost even more. Wrangell Capital Facilities Director Amber El Haddad says contractors are doing what they've been asked to, but major developments like this take time.
I think that what they're doing is exactly what is needed. You know, clearing the whole land first and then coming through and they're excavating and returning, filling right as they excavate. So, you know, they're going through and doing it as fast as they can. It's just a long project.
While development work is ongoing, Wrangell's Economic Development Board will hold a work session on the subdivision, including how to sell lots and what stipulations might be required for purchase in mid-November. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
Climate change poses threats to subsistence practices across Alaska, particularly affecting Alaska Native communities who have relied on the land for food for millennia. Subsistence concerns were a major topic of discussion at the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention on Friday.
Subsistence isn't just the food we eat. It's our way of life and who we are as a people.
Denise May is the tribal administrator for the native village of Port Lions on Kodiak Island. She spoke at a forum at the convention where people from all over Alaska spoke about their concerns for salmon, caribou, whales, berries, and other subsistence food sources. Charles Wright is from Rampart on the Yukon River, which along with the Kuskokwim River is experiencing an historic salmon collapse.
All of us in here are related and connected through salmon. It's dear to all of us. It's dear to all of our elders. It's mental, physical, and spiritual well-being of all of our people. The system that we try to make changes in, the management, is broken. We need to stand up together and demand more.
The Alaska Federation of Natives recently signed on to a federal lawsuit against the state of Alaska to protect subsistence rights. Currently, the state doesn't enforce a preference for rural subsistence users in fish and game management decisions during the times of resource shortage. That contradicts the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, or ANILCA, that gives rural residents preference during restrictions. The Alaska Constitution mandates resource access for all Alaskans at all times. Jonathan Samuelson is chair of the Kuskokwim Intertribal Fish Commission, another organization that signed on to the lawsuit.
The time for recognized tribal stewardship is now. The time for sovereignty is now.
The commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game told KNBA that the agency is following its constitutional duty to provide equal access to wildlife resources and maintaining authority over navigable waterways. Both sides expect the fight to reach the U.S. Supreme Court. Two teenagers will pay several thousand dollars in fines and forfeit their guns and hunting licenses for illegally shooting two brown bears on the Sitka Road last fall and dumping the carcasses. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has this report.
17-year-old Peter Wesley Holst last month pleaded guilty to 7 misdemeanor counts ranging from unlawful methods of taking game to hunting in a closed area to failure to salvage a brown bear hide and skull. 5 other related charges were dismissed by Magistrate Judge Pamela Stela Kernin. According to court documents, Holst and co-defendant, 17-year-old Bay Evan Barkhofer, shot a brown bear on the evening of September 30, 2022, on the Nelson Logging Road outside of Sitka. Holst used a Remington 12-gauge shotgun to kill the animal. Barkhofer fired a Ruger 44 Magnum pistol, but missed, based on cell phone video evidence provided to wildlife troopers by a witness. Neither Holst or Barkhofer was in possession of a bear tag, and the animal was illuminated in the headlights of Holst's vehicle, a Chevy Silverado pickup, which was stopped less than a quarter mile from the state highway, Halibut Point Road. The pair, aided by some other teens, then loaded the carcass into the pickup and drove partway up Harbor Mountain Road and dumped the carcass over an embankment. On October 8, 2022, again according to court documents, Holst killed a second brown bear, again in the headlights of his vehicle on the Nelson Logging Road near the footbridge over Stargavin Creek. He was accompanied by another teen who did not fire a gun, but instead, with the assistance of multiple juveniles, helped load the illegally killed bear into the truck and drive it to Harbor Mountain Road for disposal. Barkhofer pleaded guilty to 5 wildlife violations for his participation in the first incident, with total fines of $1,250. He'll be on probation for 2 years and unable to hunt or trap for the first year of his probation. Holst was fined a total of $7,000, with $3,500 suspended, the balance of which he can pay or serve 350 hours of community service instead. He'll pay $2,600 restitution to the state of Alaska for the 2 bears, either in cash or from his permanent fund dividends for the next 2 years. Holst will be on probation for 4 years and unable to hunt for the first 2 years of his probation. Both teens forfeited the firearms used in the incidents. Their phones and GoPro camera were returned. Alaska wildlife troopers were able to locate the discarded carcass of one of the bears on Harbor Mountain Road. The hide and skull of the animal were present, but the 2 front paws had been removed. According to court documents, Holst admitted to disposing of the claws and a section of the bear's hide on Blue Lake Road on the morning of October 12, 2022, in anticipation of contact from wildlife troopers investigating the shooting of a brown bear outside of Holst's home on the 1400 block of Edgecombe Drive the previous night. The subsequent trooper investigation determined that the Edgecombe Drive bear was killed legally in defense of life or property, and the names of Holst and another involved juvenile were not publicly linked to the incident. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
An Alaska-based study will explore the possible role of financial incentives and family support in the process of quitting smoking. The work is a collaboration between the Mayo Clinic and Alaska Tribal Health Groups.
The idea is to develop an effective and culturally aligned approach to help Alaska Native people quit smoking.
Dr. Timothy Thomas is a research physician with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. He says this research is adapted from several previous Mayo studies of smoking cessation in Alaska with input from tribal leadership. The study is currently in the beta testing stage, but eventually it will include 1,200 pairs of Alaska Native people who smoke and support people. For the large study, the smoker will take frequent breathalyzer and swab tests at home, then receive a financial reward if they've successfully abstained from smoking. But as Thomas explains, it's a randomized control trial, so not every participant will have the same experience.
We believe that incentives will work, but we, in the world of science and research, we have to prove it. And what that usually means in our world of research is randomizing people. Some people will get rewards for the 6 months each time they are quit, that they're tested and they're quit, will get an escalating amount.
There will also be a sample that will receive no financial incentive as a control. Thomas says smoking rates are higher in Alaska than other states and higher still among Alaska Native people, which motivated the ANTCH to fund this research. The ANTHC, rather. Funding also comes from a National Institutes of Health grant.
The cost of tobacco to the healthcare setting in Alaska is huge. It's estimated that for each year, it costs Alaska about $575 million in direct medical costs. More Alaskans die from tobacco-related illnesses than they do from suicide, motor vehicle crashes, chronic liver disease, homicide, and HIV/AIDS.
Thomas says that because of past research, he's very optimistic about the inclusion of financial incentives. But the implementation of a strategy like that in the real world, he says, requires a bigger conversation about the American healthcare system.
Historically, we've spent a lot of our money on the treatment end of the spectrum and less on the prevention end. And so I think that's a big question. And I think, you know, politicians need to weigh in on this in terms of where are we going to put our
healthcare dollars. The researchers are currently working out the kinks with a 20-person beta test and plan to begin recruiting for the larger research study next spring. They'll also host a symposium in Anchorage next March, where they'll present about Alaska Native youth tobacco use.
Support for KMXT comes from Alaska's most advanced network. GCI's resilient and redundant network is keeping schools connected across the state. Details at gci.com/education.
Dodging taxes on a global scale. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute. A global minimum tax on corporations is being undermined by loopholes, according to a report from a European tax policy think tank. The EU Tax Observatory at the Paris School of Economics says the 15% minimum tax will generate half as much revenue as hoped for because of modifications over the last 2 years. Meanwhile, the same group is also urging countries to crack down on tax evasion by the wealthy. It estimates a new billionaire's tax could raise $250 billion a year, or about 2% of the total wealth held by the world's richest people. Yet another antitrust probe of Google, this time from authorities in Japan. They're investigating Google's search dominance on Android devices. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by KeyBank. Learn more at key.com/cybersecurity.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 23rd day of October, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 9:02. It will set again at 6:44, giving us 9 hours and 42 minutes of precious daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 49 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 55 degrees set in 1936, and our record low temperature was 19 set in 1966. Currently 40 degrees under fair skies with calm winds and 10 miles of visibility at the airport. The Weather Service is calling for mostly sunny skies for today and tomorrow. Mostly sunny for Wednesday, too, with partly sunny skies on Thursday and a chance of rain beginning Friday and going through the weekend. Look for northwest winds to about 10 today, coming down to about 0 tonight, and calm winds tomorrow as well. Light southeast winds starting on Tuesday night. Looking at our local tides, we have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide will be at 3:52 p.m. here on the east side. That will be a 3.8-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 9:53 p.m. of 7.7 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 4:56 p.m. and be 5.6 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 10:29 p.m., call it 10:30, of 11.5 feet. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side, out to 15 nautical miles. North 15, becoming variable 10 tonight. 5-foot seas becoming 6 feet tonight. Variable 10 tomorrow, too, becoming southeast 15. 5-foot seas becoming 7 foot tomorrow night. For Wednesday through Friday on our east side, southeast 20, seas to 9 feet. Over in the Chillicothe Strait, northeast 15 for today and tonight with 3-foot seas. Variable 10 for tomorrow with seas to 2 feet. And variable 10 for tomorrow night, seas coming up to 3 feet. Wednesday through Friday in the Chillicothe east 20, seas to 4 feet. Notice is hereby given there will be a Board of Education emergency special meeting tonight. That's happening at 5:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, which is number F-140 of the old high school wing. Items on the emergency special meeting agenda include the Carlick School. The meeting agenda and packet for this meeting can be viewed on board docs at the Kodiak Island Borough School District website. For more information, contact Jamie Bennett, Interim Secretary to the Board of Education, at 907-486-7552. The Kodiak Public Library will be haunting. Okay, let's start over. The Kodiak Public Library will be haunting a haunted library in the barn. That's happening October 27th, 28th, and 31st. Patrons can visit Friday, October 27th, from 3:30 to 4:30 p.m., Saturday, October 28th, from 1 to 2 p.m., or 2:30 to 3:30 p.m., and Halloween night from 5:30 to 7 p.m. No sign-ups are required. Call the library at 486-8686 for more information. That's happening at the barn, the Haunted Library. Wednesdays at 3:30 p.m. is the famous Lego Club. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Thursdays at 10:30 a.m. is preschool story time for children ages 3 to 6. And Fridays at 10:30 a.m., the library hosts its Lap Sit story time for babies to age 3. And remember, library hours are Mondays, Fridays, and Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Tuesdays and Thursdays, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. The Elders Afternoon Game Time is coming up at the Kodiak Public Library. That's happening on Wednesday from 2:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. It's a place for food, fun, and friends. It's sponsored by Canner Elder Services, and transportation is available for beneficiaries. Call 907-486-7352 to schedule a ride. Meetings coming up in the Kodiak Island Borough include tomorrow's meeting of the Parks and Recreation regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 11 a.m. On Wednesday, the Solid Waste Advisory Board will be having their regular meeting in the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center Conference Room at 5:15 p.m. And on Thursday, October 26th, the Assembly will be having its work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. Also, tomorrow, the Kodiak Island City Council will be having its work session at 7:30 p.m. in the library's multipurpose room. That meeting is open to the public and will be broadcast here on KMXT on 100.1 FM. The meeting will also be web-streamed, and the packet and web-streaming link can be found at the City of Kodiak website. The city will also be having a regular meeting on Thursday at 7:30 p.m. at the library's multipurpose room with the same details. Coming up next Tuesday, not tomorrow, but Tuesday, October 24th, that actually is tomorrow. Tomorrow at 6 p.m., Talk with a Doc at the community at Kodiak Community College in room 128. Join our local providers for an informal, informative, and community-driven discussion. Behavioral health is key to overall health and that of a community. You're invited to join Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center's resident psychiatrist and a team of providers for an informal and informative discussion on mental well-being and behavioral health in Kodiak. This is an opportunity to explore available resources, ask questions, and discuss behavioral health concerns in the community, including the growing challenges affecting teens and substance use support. Again, that's happening at 6 p.m. tomorrow at the Kodiak Community College, room 128.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181. Fax us at 486-2733 or email psa@kmxt.com.